starting here on the top of Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, three lines down, the Gemara left off yesterday discussing the Yisod HaMizbeach as to why there was no Yisod HaMizbeach on the southern side as well as on the eastern side of the Mizbeach. The Gemara's conclusion was based on the Midrashim and a number of Memrot over here that the Chelek of Yehuda extended into the area of Binyamin in those two locations. There was a strip on the eastern side of the Mizbeach that's an Amah wide, and then along the southern side as well, there's a strip from Yehuda that extends into Binyamin. And for that reason, the Mizbeach was not placed there, because the assumption of the Gemara was that the place where the Mizbeach belonged was in Shevet Binyamin. And so any part of Yehuda that was there could not house or hold the Mizbeach. And so that's why you had curtailed or had to cut off those areas of the Mizbeach, because they were then the area of Shevet Yehuda. Now, in addition, we knew that from Binyamin's being bothered by the fact that Yehuda had that section, he also was then rewarded with, or won, the fact that the Shekhinah would be Shorah in the area of Shevet Binyamin. Yesterday, we went through the different possibilities as to both why Shevet Binyamin was picked as the host for the Shekhinah, as well as why that was the reward for Shevet Binyamin if they knew up front they were going to lose that space. And if they're bothered by it, but they also knew up front that they were going to get the Shekhinah. So we discussed both of those issues at the end of yesterday's shiur. Now the Gemara wants to check if this is really true, if this makes sense. Meitave, we're now asking from a Mishnah later on in the Masechta about Ulat Ha'ov. When it comes to Ulat Ha'ov, like Chatata Behema, it is done on the upper half of the Mizbeach. Those are the two Korbanot done above the Chuta Sikra, Ulat Ha'ov. So it's easy to remember, it's just Ola Ta'ov is Ola on top. And then you just know that for Behema, it's the opposite. That's Chatat, the Behema is on top, and the Olat Behema is on the bottom. So that's how you know the two items that are on top of the Chuta Sikra is the Ola Ta'ov and the Chatat Behema. Kefer Ayeta Nasit. How is the Ola Ta'ov processed? How do you bring that Kurban? Hayam Molek et Rosha Mimol Orpa. He does Milika, which is the method in the Migdash for, quote unquote, shechting birds, which is that the Goyen with his hand puts the thumb or the nail of his thumb through the back of the neck of the Ola Ta'ov, umavdil, as opposed to a chatat where the head remains on the bird. Over here by the Ola, he actually pops the head off because he has to go through both simanim with regards to the Ola Ta'ov, whereas by the chatat Ta'ov, he only goes through one of the two simanim. And then, mimatze dama al-tir ha-mizbeach. He presses the blood of the Ola Ta'ov against the wall of the Mizbeach. It probably squirted out as well, but it pushes it towards that area. V'yamart lo hiya la yisod. If it's true that there was no yisod, bavir ba'alma hu deko ovid. Then he's doing it in the middle of the airspace. It's a very difficult Gemara. It's not even clear what the question is. And at Machloket Rashi, the Balei Tosafot, even after we have their interpretations, it's still very difficult. So we know that the Goyen ascended the ramp of the Mizbeach to do any Korban that was done on the upper half of the Mizbeach. They turned off to the Sovev to go around the Mizbeach. We saw that with the Chatat Be'iman yesterday. We also know that that's true by the Olat Ha'ov. So he turns off onto the Sovev of the Mizbeach to do the Olat Ha'ov. Then he comes to the corner where he's going to process the Olat Ha'ov. That is when you first come off the Kevesh, which is at the face of the Mizbeach, the front of the Mizbeach is the southern side. He goes up on the southern side, makes a right turn. Then he's going to come to the southeastern corner, where he's going to process the Olat Ha'ov. Now the southeastern corner of the Mizbeach is the one corner of the Mizbeach that has no Yisod whatsoever. So now he's standing over there. The reason for him standing there, likely we'll see later on when we get to Olat Ha'ov, is that he has to make a really good toss from there to get the remains or the parts of the bird that are going to be thrown out to the Beit HaDeshen. And he has to make a throw from there, which from that location is the easiest place to do it. So now, once you have that information, you know where he's standing. Now he processes the Ola Ta'ov, and he puts the dam onto the wall of the Mizbeach. He can put it anywhere along the upper half, unlike the Chatat Behema, which requires Karanot, that which might have more specific detail about where it is located. Ola Ta'ov, it just needs to be above the Chuta Sikra. But he's in a location on the Mizbeach where he is above an area where there is no Yisod. So Rashi claims that the problem here is that when he puts the dam on the Mizbeach, it will then drip down and go down to an area where there is no Yisod. Rashi before told us that the damim of all korbanot might end up or be placed in the Mizbeach in a place where there is a Yisod. And so this would fail because there is no Yisod over here when you put the dam on the Mizbeach. That's Rashi's claim. But those who are here notes that Rashi's interpretation is premised on the fact Nirish loya katu b'ach breita. This breita that we're quoting, Shari Adam ayesh shofech yisod. That the Shari Adam used to put onto the yisod ha mizbeach. Because if that's the case, delo medak tek bekuntres. Tell me hasha adam olech liibud. Rashi says the problem is that the dam is going to go to waste. Not the fact that it says Shari Adam you're going to put on the yisod ha mizbeach. Bekasha. Temkein avele lekshuye bimatnitan te kodshe kodoshim. Ooh. Berob, Svarim, Garsin, and Khan, Shari Adam, Ayeshufech, the Yisod. The most of the Girsod, it says that they put the remaining blood onto the Yisod. So Tosfo points out that Rashi says the problem here is that the dam flows down. The truth is that the dam is done above the Sovev. So that means that it would really drip onto the Sovev. What's the big deal? We will learn later on that there is a possibility that the Kohen can bend down and do it below his feet. That is because the Chutat Sikra is an Amma below the Sovev. And that means if he wants to be on the upper half of the Mizbeach, he could bend down and do it on that area. Not necessarily why he would do such a thing, but if he did do such a thing, then that blood would drip down and there would be no Yisod to capture the dam that is below. Even on the area that's above the Sovev, it might be the fact that the blood is dripping without any Yisod down below. That inherently could be problematic. Rashi speaks about the dam going to Ibud, which, again, we find no source for the fact that the blood can't go to Ibud. Mostly because once Naseh Mitzvato, once the mitzvah is done, why does it matter where the dam goes or what happens to the blood after that point in time? Nevertheless, Rashi claims that that's the major issue, which is that at that corner, if you put the dam, especially if you do it below the Sovev, it's going to drip down and there's going to be no Yisod over there. And the Gemara's answer to that is, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Imer Kachit Nu. This was the deal, or this was the way it worked. Avira de Binyamin. The airspace belonged to Binyamin, Karka de Yehuda. So even though the ground level, or the ground space belonged to Yehuda, which is what prevented the Yisod from being there, nevertheless the airspace belonged to Binyamin. Now for Rashi, that is not necessarily an answer or a solution, because Rashi needs a Yisod for it to go to. Just because Avira belongs to Binyamin doesn't solve your problem. So Rashi makes a claim here, this is what's very difficult about Rashi's explanation, which is he says, that above three tfachim of the ground, so it's no longer batel lakarka, it's not lavud, over there, hayasuik min blitak tana, kenegad otak eren. It was a protrusion coming out of the mizbeach that caught the dam coming down. So first of all, ikar chaser min hasefer, that is a significant piece of information that we would have liked to have known. It's not mentioned in the Gemara at all. And Rashi says over here, v'kir mizbeach mikre, aval yisod lo mikre. It's called, or is a part of the wall of Mizbeach, but it's not called the Yisod. Because once you make it into a Yisod, then why can't you do all sorts of other korbanot on that corner? Because you have this piece that's a Yisod. So Rashi says it gets this quasi-status, a status of being the wall of the Mizbeach, but that prevents the blood from going to the Ibud. On the other hand, it doesn't have the status of Yisod, so that you can't use it for other korbanot. It's a very difficult explanation on a number of fronts. First of all, what's the problem with the blood going to Ibud? Number two is, where do we have any description of this board or this extra piece that was put on the Mizbeach? We don't have it in any of the Mishnayot, any of the Braitot that we quote in the Gemara. Even here, when the Gemara is discussing it, it doesn't even mention this Blita, which is a key element of the solution. And lastly, what is this idea that you have something that has a quasi-status of a Kir, but not a Yisod? And how does that solve the problem? It solves the problem that the blood is not going to go to the Ibud, but necessarily solve the problem that you need Yisod, possibly, for the Damim or the Matan Damim over there. Those are a number of issues with Rashi's perspective. The Balei HaTosafot bring all those questions down, and then they bring two interpretations. They bring one interpretation of the Rabbeinu Chaim. So Rabbeinu Chaim keeps the Girsa from the older Svarim that Tosafot mentioned before that Rashi didn't have, puts in that Girsa, or that Shari Adam, Ayishafech Al Yisod, the remainder of the blood was put on the Yisod, and he says that that blita, that extension that was put there, was in order to be a Yisod for that area, and would allow him to put the dam on the Yisod. Now, he says, Umi Ukasha, the Baal Tosafot answers to say about Rabbeinu Chaim, Di Chashiv Yisod, Le'inyan Shar Damim, Nami Chashiv Yisod. It's classified as Yisod for the Olat Ha'of. Why isn't it classified as Yisod for the other types of Korbanot that are brought over there? V'yesh Lomar, he gives an interesting answer. It was a special yisod only for dam that was done above the chutas sikra. Alinyan damim and itanim la mata for those that are done below. Imakshat le lahu karen zimin daati meitav tacharu tablita. Benitzanotei tachar yisod. It's a chance they would put it under that extension out of the base. The Tosafot gives two real answers here. One is that it really is a yisod. You can't have it all the way at the base, because anything within three tefachim in the karka would belong to Yehuda. So it has to be at least above three tefachim, maybe even higher. That opens up the possibility that someone's doing damim below, would put the dam below that plita, below that yisod. The second thing is the possibility that it was only classified as a yisod for the upper damim. That might be where it was placed. It was placed up by the chuta sikra, and therefore it only acted as a yisod for the upper half of the mizbeach, not for the lower half of the mizbeach. So that's the Baal Tosafot bring from the Rabbeinu Chaim. Again, it's a very difficult answer. The Rabbeinu Tam brings a third possibility, and this is taken up by more of the Rishonim as being the issue over here. And that is that when it comes to the Melikat Olat Ha'of, there is a Hekesh between Melikah and Haktarah. The way that you do Melikah has to be the same way that you do the Haktarah. Just like the Haktarah of the Olat Ha'of is done on the Mizbeach itself, so too the Malika must be done on the Mizbeach itself. So now when the Kohen ascends the ramp, turns to the right on the Soveiv, when he gets to the Keren Dromit Mizrachit, the southeastern corner of the Mizbeach, and now he's doing the Malika, the likelihood is that he's holding it in his right hand, and his right hand is extending over the side of the Soveiv. The Soveiv is only an Amah wide, so it's likely that he's doing the Malika over the edge of the Mizbeach. Now, if you require Malika be done on the Mizbeach, just like the Haktarah is done on the Mizbeach, then he's doing Malika over that airspace, and means that he's not over the Mizbeach. The answer of the Gemara is, Avira of that area is classified as being in Chelek Binyamin. It has a status of Mizbeach. Even though the Karka doesn't have status of Mizbeach, and there's no Yisod down there, nevertheless, the Avir, the airspace there, has a qualification as if it is part of the Mizbeach. Therefore, it's deemed that the Malika is done on the Mizbeach, quote unquote. Now, again, there are a number of assumptions here. One assumption is that had he done it over the Soveiv, it would have been fine, which is, we'll see later on, a machloket as to whether you could put a pyre on the Soveiv. If you can put a pyre on the Soveiv, then that would help, because that means that you think that the Soveiv has the same status as the upper part of the Mizbeach. And therefore, if you did the Malika there, that would qualify as being on the Mizbeach, had you done it over the Soveiv. Problem is that he's in a tight space with his right hand over the edge of the Mizbeach, and that's the problem. Had he brought it over the Soveiv, it wouldn't have been a problem. But the likelihood is that he's doing it over the side, and that's why the Avir of that area has the status of Mizbeach, and that's the solution to the problem over here. Rabbeinu Tam has an assumption here, which is that he just didn't turn his body and do it over the Soveiv, which would have solved your problem. And if you think that the Soveiv does not qualify as being on the Mizbeach, then certainly the Avir on the side is not going to qualify, even if you think it's deemed like Mizbeach. So the number of assumptions, even Rabbeinu Tam's solution, but Rabbeinu Tam avoids a number of the pitfalls that Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chaim have, which is, first of all, the Belita, which isn't mentioned here, some sort of extension that either has the status of Yisod only for certain things, or has no status of Yisod, but has the status of Kir Mizbeach. That's one of the big things. The second thing is it avoids the problem that Rashi had, which is, where do we ever find an Isur of blood going to Ibud? Rabbeinu Chaim solved that by saying it was the Sharia Dam that he's putting onto the Yisod, which is something that we know might be possible or necessary over here. But for Rashi, where it's going to Ibud, we have no explanation where you have a restriction against doing such a thing. Here, by the Rabbeinu Tam, at least we have conceptually an idea that the Malika is connected to the Haktarah that should be done on the top of the Mizbeah. So that's the Rabbeinu Tam's explanation. So now, the Gemara asks, "My lo avala Yisod." What does it mean that the southern side and the eastern side did not have a yisod? Rav Amar Bibinyan. Rav, like all the pictures that we have shown, all the pictures that we've looked at, says that the physical structure did not exist over there. There was no yisod on the southern and eastern side. Levi Amar Bidamim. Levi says that structurally or physically, there was a yisod over there. It's a halachic problem, not a structural problem. And so it went all the way around, but it was not qualified in certain areas to be used as a yesod. And so it is a halachic designation, not that the structure was missing a yesod over there. So Rav Mitargem. We did this yesterday when we quoted the pasuk from Birkat Yaakov. We went and looked at the Targum Unculus on the pasuk. So the difference between Rav and Levi's position comes from the Targum of that pasuk of Binyamin Ze'ev Yitraf, where it says, Ba'aksante Yadvanei Madvecha. So Rav's Targum read that in his possession, the Mizbeach would sit, which means that only in Binyamin's possession does the Mizbeach sit, not in Yehuda's possession whatsoever. That means the structure of the Mizbeach was not found in Yehuda at all. Levi mitargem, on the other hand, Levi's targum of that pasuk was, Baksante Yadvanei Magdasha, that the location of the Mikdash was in Binyamin's Chelek, which is Makom Mikudash Ledamim. Not Magdasha in the sense that Mikdash as a whole, but the place that is Mikudash Ledamim, the place that is valid for the Matnot Dam, that is in the area of Binyamin. So even though the structure of the Mizbeach goes into the area of Yehuda, the area that's qualified for Damim is only that area which is Mikudash, the area that is inside of Binyamin. Now, our Targum reads Magdusha, that's what we read yesterday in Targum Unculus, and that means that Rav would have to say that Magdusha there means, that's not Mikudash for Damim, Magdusha means the Mikdash. And the Mikdash being the major area of the Mikdash, which is the Eichal, the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim, that was in the area of Binyamin. So Rav could have read it in that manner, but he had a Targum that specifically said that the Mizbeach was in Binyamin, and for him, the Mizbeach can't be in Yehuda at all. The structure of the Mizbeach can't be there. So Tashma, now we're going to challenge these views. Hayisod Hayamelech al pnei kol hatzafon, v'al pnei kol hamarav. The Yisod ran, this is the Mishnah Masechet Midot, along the entire northern side, and along the entire western side. Ochel b'darom amachat, and then it protruded into the southern side, one amah, u'mizrak amachat. And on the eastern side, it also protruded in amachat. Again, we looked at these pictures yesterday. The most likely explanations are either what we see in Rashi on the previous amud, and Rashi again over here makes a similar description, which is that when you say ochel amah, means that not only did it come off the western side, or come off the northern side into the eastern and southern sides, but actually turned the corner one amah. It took up an amah over there. Or, you learn like the Tiferet Yisrael, Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, and the Mirut Panim, that say that they never turned the corner. It was just that if you continued along the western side, it extended out of the western side, an amah, into the southern side, and same with the north, it protruded an amah out to these, it never turns, it never makes a turn. The amah is the actual just continuation of that line extending a little bit beyond the edge of the Mizbeach. So that would be the description of what is here in Masechet Midot. That sounds exactly like Rav, which is that we're talking about the structure of the Mizbeach, that physically the Yisod was only this big and only went to this location. Where it says, "My ochel, nami b'damim." What does it mean that it ate up or it went? It means that it went onto the southern side, not physically that it went in Amah there, but halakhically it went in Amah there, but the Yisod continued. There was a physical or a structure there, just that when we say Ochel Amah, it means that the halakhic definition of Yisod only went for an Amah onto that side. That's how Levi will answer that question. Tashma, Mizbeach haya 32 al 32. The base of the Mizbeach was 32 by 32 Amot. We're going to spend in a minute a large amount of time going through how the Mizbeach was put together and the structure of the Mizbeach. But the base layer was made up of a square of 32 by 32. So for Rav, that's a huge problem. Rav does not have a squared out area in the base of the Mizbeach. For Rav, the square is curtailed on the southern side and the eastern side because there was no Yisod over there. So he doesn't have an area that's square of 32 by 32. He actually has a 31 by 31, except for the corners where it's 32 by 32. But otherwise it's a 31 by 31 base area. How come they're saying that it's 32 by 32 in Masechet Midot? It says, Achumai Skinan, Minetzad. Even for Rav, there is an area of the Mizbeach that is 32 Amot. If you looked at it from the areas from the Yisod to the areas where there's no Yisod, then in those areas, there's only 31 amot and 31 amot. And especially in Rashi's Shita, it's easier to see this, but Rashi's Shita, where it turns the corner, then from that area where it turns the corner to the other side, there is 32 amot. And same thing on the southwestern corner, that little blita, if you went back and forth, that'd be 32 amot. So either you say the sod itself in the areas where it existed for the Tiferet Yisrael is 32 by 32, or for Rashi, if you even take a step into the Mizbah, because it turns the corner, and you have an area that it is 32 by 32. It's not the footprint of the entirety of the Mizbah, but there are areas of the Mizbah where it is 32 by 32, and that will be the explanation of that Mishnah according to Rav. Tashma, Nimsa Poreach Ama al Yisod, Bama al Sovev. What's being described over here is a problem that we're going to deal with later on in the Gemara, which is that the Mishnah lays out the footprint both of the Mizbeach, but more importantly, of the Azara. And when it's describing the footprint of the Azara, it tells you that the Mizbeach and the Kevesh, the ramp up to the Mizbeach, take up 62 amot of the floor plan of the Azara. The problem with that is, the Mizbeach we just said is 32 by 32. So that means, if you're going from north to south along the Azara, and now you're trying to figure out, what's taking up the floor plan? What is the spacing of the Azara? Then the Mizbeach is going to take up 32 amot. The Kevesh, we're told, is 32 amot long as well. So if the Kevesh is 32 amot, and the Mizbeach is 32 amot, the floor space taken up by it should have been 64 amot. Yet, the Mishnah says that the Mizbeach and the Kevesh only take up 62 amot. We're short 2 amot. The answer that the Gemara explains is that the ramp of the Mizbeach had to reach the top of the Mizbeach. But the top of the Mizbeach is not flush with the base of the Mizbeach. The top of the Mizbeach is indented both for the Yisod as well as the Sovev. And so what you see here is that the ramp of the Mizbeach actually sat on a part of the Mizbeach, on the Yamai Yisod, as well as in the Yamai Sovev, so that it was flush with the top of the Mizbeach. Now there is a little gap there, which we'll deal with later on in the Masechta, but it basically has to be flush, it has to sit two amot on the Mizbeach. That's the solution to the problem. There's the Yisod, which is a step that is an Aman depth. There's the Sovev, which is also a step that is an Aman depth. And then for you to be adjacent from the ramp to the top of the Mizbeach, you would have to put the ramp sitting on those two amot in the Mizbeach. That's the solution to the problem. The base of the ramp is 32 amot. The base of the Mizbeach is 32, but only equals 62, because there's a tuma ama overlap between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach. And that is on the Amah Yisod, and then that is on the Amah HaSovev. But what's being described here is that the Kevesh is riding on the Yisod on the southern side, and riding on the Sovev on the southern side. According to Rav, there is no Yisod on the southern side. So what do you mean that the Kevesh is riding on top of the Amah HaYisod? So the answer again is, Ema Keneged Amah Yisod, Ve'al Amah Sovev. It's not the same thing. It's riding on the Amah Sovev, but it is where the Yisod would have been had there been a Yisod on the southern side. And that's what is depicted here in the handouts that I sent out. You can see that the area where that placement is, I left it in sense hollow to show you that the Yisod would have passed under there. So it is in the area where the Yisod would have been, but there is no Yisod over there. And so that's where it sits. It rides on what would have been the Yisod. And for Rabbi, that has to be included in the 32 amot, because that's how you get the squared out 32 amot in this Mizbeach. Even though there's no Yisod here, the 32 amot would measure to that empty space. That's what he says. It's riding on that empty space, which is where the Yisod would have been, and then it rides literally on the Sovev. And so that's how Rav solves the problem. Tashma, the Tani Levi, Ketzad Bonim et HaMizbeach. How do you build the Mizbeach? So if a Braita describing for us how they actually went about building the Mizbeach in Bayit Sheni. Mevin Malbein, Shu Shloshim Ushtaim, Al Shloshim Ushtaim. They bring a form that is 32 by 32. It is what you see whenever they do concrete construction. When you pour concrete, you have to pour it into a form. Concrete is a liquid, and it will spread wherever it's allowed to go. So what you do is you create a form, and then you pour the cement into that form to hold it in place. And then when it dries, you can take away the form. So that's the same thing they did by the Mizbeah. They had a form that was 32 by 32, v'govho amah, and it was an amah tall. So this is what's going to end up being the base of the Mizbeah. Remember that the Yisod Mizbeah is an amah in height, and then it goes steps in an amah. So the base is going to be 32 by 32, and an amah high, which is the height of the Yisod HaMizbeach. So then, umevi, they bring chalukei avanim. They bring what seemingly are smooth stones, mifulamot. Mifulamot is translated either to mean round, or you can see here in the sheet of Mekubetz that he brings that a translation of mifulot, and Rashi notes something similar, are lachot. They are moist. Now whether that means the stone itself is quote-unquote tari, a fresh stone that was dug up from somewhere where the stone had not been exposed before, and that's what makes it moist. That means that the moisture is describing where you find the stone, but also the stone itself is moist. Or does it mean that they took these from the base of a river, or from the Mediterranean, the floor of the Mediterranean? That's what it means, moist, that they're found in water locations, and they're picking up these smooth stones that are at the floor of these areas. Ben gedolot, ben ktanot. They weren't particular if they were large stones or if they were small stones. The main qualifications were that they were smooth stones, rounded stones, and moist, whatever that definition is that we said before. Umevi, and then you bring sid, vikunya, vizefet. Sid is some sort of lime, cement-like lime mixture. Kunya is a molten lead glaze, is what's usually used for. But over here with some sort of molten lead, the zephet and his pitch. So they put this liquid mixture, umimacheh, you mix those up together, vishofech, and then you pour that into the form. So the form, which was built, had all these stones that they put in there, and then in order to connect all the stones together, and to also get it to a smooth surface, they poured in this molten cement lead pitch. And then that solidified over there, and that created a block. And then you removed the form, and now you had a block that was 32 by 32 by one amah high. Vizehu makom yisod. That was the yisod amizbeach. Vechozer. And now you do this again. Umevi malbein shushloshim amah ashloshim amah. Then you bring another form that is 30 by 30 amot. Vigovo chamesh amot. And has a height of 5 amot. And then you fill the form the same way you did it for the yisod. And now you're going to get a block that is 30 by 30, 5 amot tall. If you take that block and then sit it on top of the first block that we made, then you're going to have a border around it, which the second block is narrower than the first block, an amah. And that creates yisod ha-mizbeach. Yisod is an amah high, because that's the first block was an amah high. And then the depth of a step of an amah, because 30 by 30 on an inside an area of 32 by 32, if you center it, there'll be an amah left on the perimeter on each side, and that gives you the yisod. Now it is 5 amah tall, because that's where the soveiv of the mizbeach will be. And then they create a new form. Then he brings another form that is 28 by 28, v'govo shalosh amot, and is 3 amot high. So then you take that block and sit it centered on the 30 by 30. That once again creates a step with depth of an amah at 6 amot of height on the mizbeach. That is where the soveiv is on the mizbeach. It's 6 amot off the ground. And then the 3 amot gets you to the platform of the mizbeach. That's the top of the mizbeach. That is the area of the pyre, because that's the top of the mizbeach. That's a total of 9 amot. But then you need the karnot to get you to the final 10th amah. Uzer mevi malbein. And then you bring the last form, shu amah al amah, which is a cubic amah, which is what they're going to create the karnot from. Mevi chalukei avanim, mifulamot, ben gdolot, ben ktanot, mevi zefet kunyo memacheh v'shufek, v'zehu keren. That is the keren. V'chein l'chol keren v'keren. And then each of the four karnot you do in that manner, place them on top. Rav says that the structure of the Mizbeach is not 32 by 32 at the base of the Mizbeach. Yet here we have a Braita that is describing to us that the base of the Mizbeach was 32 by 32. Now, how are you going to solve the problem? If you start out, and you can see this on page 5 of the handout that I sent out last night, it has the different sections due to put together the Mizbeach. And then, for Rav, now you have a base that's 32 by 32. The only option is the Chiteima, the Gaiz Leah. You'll have to cut off an Amma along the southern side. You have to cut off an Amma along the eastern side. Problem with that is Avanim Shleimot Ktiv. The Torah says that you have to make the Mizbeach out of Avanim Shleimot. You're not allowed to make it out of Avanim that are cut, number one. And number two is that have any imperfection in them. They need to be smooth stones. This is one of the things we mentioned before, that they were Chalukei Avanim. They were smooth stones, rounded and smooth stones, because you're not allowed to have any catch in those stones. The way they did it, if you ran your finger on it, it wouldn't get caught on anything that's there. So that's an important aspect over here. In addition, the Balei HaTosafot say that there's also the problem of Lo Tanicha Lehem Barzel. If you break it without using metal, it's very unlikely that you're going to get a smooth stone. If you want to use metal to get a smooth surface, then you're in violation of Lo Tanicha Lehem Barzel. So you have a problem here, which is if you create the form as 32 by 32, to slice it off after the fact is very problematic. So then he says, no problem. The machet mide mitute v'shaki ole. It's equivalent to what they do today. They sometimes use styrofoam as the form itself. But if you have a form and you want an area not to be filled by concrete, you put styrofoam in there and it prevents the concrete from spreading to that area. So they did the same thing. You can see the picture here. They just put wood, or they put something in the form that didn't allow the concrete to get there. It was a 32 by 32 form, but then they placed a filler and a placeholder in the area where there was no yesod, and that allowed it to form a 32 by 32 without that area having yesod. You wouldn't have to cut it off after the fact. It would be up front that way. Tosfot asked the obvious question, the top Tosfot. He says, Tema mikar l'abed malbein binyan zeh. Why do you have to make a 32 by 32, and then place the filler material in there that won't allow the concrete and the stones to go there, just build a malbein that has that. Now, with all due respect to Balei HaTosafot, that's much harder. To create something where it is a 31 by 31 with some inlets like this and turns the corners, it's much easier to build the square and then just put in the pieces that you don't want to be filled in. Just from a mechanical standpoint and engineering-wise, it would have been easier for them to do it this way. The Balei HaTosafot, I say, why not just make it that way up front? All right, good question, but I think it was easier to do it this way, and that's probably the answer as to why they do that. The Balei HaTosafot ask a much more fundamental question. They spent a lot of time it over here, and we had a large Tosafot in Avodah Zarah. We discussed it as well, as to whether the Shamir existed during Bayit Sheni. The Balei HaTosafot go through a number of proofs that the Shamir exists in Bayit Sheni, and that, he then says, why couldn't they use the Shamir to solve the problem? The Shamir is a worm that cuts without using metal. It gives you a perfect, nice cut. So that would be a great solution over here. You build a 32 by 32, and after the fact, you cut it with the Shamir, and you get the results you want. Truthfully, it would also, again, be easier to put a 32 by 32 and stick in filler so it doesn't fill in and not have to cut anything than to build a 32 by 32 and then cut it after the fact. But the Balei HaTosafot would say there is a possibility of cutting after the fact if you have the Shamir. This is the context here as to why the Tosafot is asking. In Avodah Zarah, he's asking it because of what happened by the Chashmonaim. When the Yevanim entered into the Mikdash, they were mitameh the Mizbeach, and then they didn't know what to do with the fact that they'd been mitameh the Mizbeach, because they can't break it and cut it, the parts that were tameh or ruined, because then you would have the problem of not getting a smooth cut or putting metal on the Mizbeach. On the other hand, you can't just leave it that way because then it has a begum in the Mizbeach. Tosafot over there asks, why didn't they use the Shamir? The same question he asks over here. So the Balei HaTosafot's answer in both cases is that the Shamir gave a nice cut, but not a perfect cut. Which means that if it cut the Shamir, it would leave something where it would be a nice, perfect cut, but the cut would not necessarily be smooth. It's supposed to metal, or if you sanded it down over there, the stone then would be perfectly smooth. Over here, when you use the Shamir, you would still get some sort of little niches and notches in the stone and would not be perfectly smooth. It's a rougher cut, but not as rough as you would do if you just smashed it, but it is a rougher cut than doing with metal, and that would not qualify by the Mizbeach. It might have worked by the Mikdash. It may not have to be that smooth, but by the Mizbeach, that has this requirement that it be absolutely smooth and absolutely flat-faced. then the Shamir would not succeed at doing that. And that was the problem with using the Shamir. The Shamir was there, but it wouldn't have solved the problem over here. Now, the verse says, that must be how they did it. Dilote mahochi, hadamar Rav Kahana. What are you going to do with what Rav Kahana says? Avanim shel karanot chalulot hayu. That the karanot and the mizbeach were actually hollow inside. Dichtiv, because they have the pasuk from Zechariah, where it says, you might be familiar with it, because it's part of the liturgy on Rosh Hashanah. Zechariah says, Vashem alehem yera'eh, v'yatzak barach chitzo, Vashem elukim bishofar yitka, v'alach b'sarot teiman. That's one of the psukim that we quote in the liturgy of Rosh Hashanah. And then the pasuk afterward is, Hashem tzvakot yagen alehem, which is actually how we end. We quote only a portion of the next pasuk. We don't quote the whole thing. And then we have a bracha that Hashem should still protect us today. But then the pasuk really continues. It says, Hashem tzvakot yagen alehem v'achlu v'kabshu avnei kela. That they will devour and then they will either run over or entrap the stones of the slingshots or of the catapults. V'shatu amo kamo yayin. They will drink and make noise as if they were intoxicated with wine. Umalu kamizrak kizaviot mizbeach. And they should be filled like the basins akin to the corners of the mizbeach. So now it calls the corners of the mizbeach a mizrak, or something that is a capture mechanism. And from that, the Gemara concludes that the karnot were hollow on the inside. So, hachanami avenim shlemot amarachmana. Now you're in the same problem Rav has with the 32 by 32 base. How are you going to pour something into a form that's a cubic gama and then come out with something hollow in the middle? You're going to do it after the fact? Then you're cutting stones. You can't do that after the fact. Ela demachit midei mitute v'shokule. You put in a placeholder in there that allows it for it to be hollow. And sakanami, so too by us, by the 32 by 32, Rav will say the same thing. Demachit midei mitute v'shokule. He puts a spacer in there so the cement and stones don't go into that area. And then it remains hollow. The Bali Tosafot say, why did the Gemara bring the proof from here, from the Pasuk? There's much more obvious and explicit proof, which is both by the Yisod and also by the Karnot. By the Yisod, it says in the Masechet Midot that there were two holes in the Yisod at the southwestern corner, one to the south, one to the west, and that was where they poured the Shari Adam, and he used to flow down there from there and meet an Amad below and flow out to the Shittim and then go out to the Nachal Kidron. But that means that they went through the Yisod. How did they have a hole in the Yisod? The obvious answer is they had to put a straw or something in there that held the space, and then eventually they took it out, and that's how they had a hole there. So it's clear in Masechet Midot that they had to do that. That would have been an obvious proof. And the same thing with regards to the wine and water libations on the Karnot. When they're done on the Karen, there were pipes in the Karen that allowed them to flow down onto the face of the Mizbeach. So again there, in Masechet Midot, it's obvious that those are there. The Bai just went in and say, Enochanami. You could have brought the proof from there. The Gemara favored using a pasuk. They always rather have something from the Mikra than something from the Mishnah. And that's why they used this pasuk. Why were the Karnot hollow? Or as to what that function was? Rashi over here, Lishitato. This is the second time we're going to see this in Rashi. There's another time in the Masech that he does this. But Rashi over here says that the reason that they made them hollow is because nikavim nikavim amukim ba'arbatan, they made these deep holes or protrusions, even piping in them. She pulled damachatat vivla b'tocho. That when you put the damachatat on the keren, it would fall into the keren. It would not stay on the keren. It would flow into the keren. What's obvious from this is that Rashi thinks that the matan dam of the chatat was done on the top of the keren. Now we saw yesterday a machlok between Abulaz of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi. Rabbi says it needs to be done on the face of the Karen, an Amah here and an Amah here, and the Chatkhila should be done on the Choda, on the corner of the Karnot. But for Rabbi, he couldn't do it on the other faces of the Karen, and obviously not on the top of the Karen. For Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, the way Rashi explained to me yesterday was, the Karen means the whole cubic Amah that is there. And therefore, Rashi said yesterday, when we said that Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yochanan didn't argue in the position of Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon, that you could put the dam anywhere you wanted on the keren. And for Rashi, that means on the inside of the keren, the top of the keren, the outside of the keren, anywhere you want, you could put the dam. So Rashi here, consistent with that, says you could put the dam on top. And the hole was there, so the blood flowed into the keren itself. That seems to be Rashi's shita throughout Shas, which is that he paskins like Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. That the matnot dam were done on the keren, and the keren means anywhere on the keren, even though we might have preferred to do it on the choda, but over here there's a reason to do it on top, because it flows in. Right, so that's the way Rashi learns it. The Rambam and others seem to think we paskin like Rabbi and not Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, which means that you have a right to put it on the keren, anywhere on the Amma, from the Chuta Sikra upwards, an Amma in each direction. We said yesterday that it should be the Chatila on the Chulda, on the corner of the Keren, but for sure you cannot put it on top of the Keren, according to Rabbi. And then you would have to explain here that the Keren was just hollow inside, but it didn't open out to the outside. It wasn't anything where the Keren itself, or there was a function to the hollowness, it was just the fact that the Karnot were hollow. Now, it might have helped with regards to the wine and water libations where they had to put the piping through. Maybe that would help if it was hollow inside. But on the one Karen that was true, it helped. But then it just seems from here that the Rambam says that it was just hollow inside, but doesn't give any purpose to that hollowness. So the Baalei Tosafot say about Rashi, "Bekonshes perish nekavim ayu b'dal karnot shipul adam achatad otocham v'yivla v'teim ala perisho shelo yematnot l'mala el keneged chodam v'imachutz." Since when do you put the blood on top of the keren? This is the view of many of the Rishonim. Unlike Rashi, that when Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon said you put on the keren, it didn't mean anywhere on the keren. It meant on the corner of the keren, or at most, the outer face of the keren. Not on the inner face of the keren, not on the top of the keren. And therefore, Tosafot is perplexed as to what Rashi is talking about here, that you're putting the Dama Chatat on top of the keren. So now the Gemara moves on to the location of the Mikdash. Because the Gemara before said that the Mikdash was situated on the border between Yehuda and Binyamin. So Doresh Rabba, Maydichtiv, what is meant in the Pasuk where it says, V'David barach, V'yimaleit, V'yavoel Shmuel aramato, V'yakeilu et kol asher asalo Shaul, V'yilechu u'Shmuel v'yishvu b'nayot. And then the subsequent Pasuk says, V'yugad Shaul lemor, Hinei David b'nayot barama. So David, who's running away from Shaul, goes to visit Shmuel. Shmuel was found in the Ramah. That was the location. That's where Shmuel lived. That is in the outside of Yerushalayim, the Ramot of today, which is by Nebe Samuel, because that was the area that was known as the Ramot or the Ramah where Shmuel used to live. So David, he left being with Shaul because Shaul wants to kill him. And he runs then to the area of Shmuel, and then he sends out people to chase after David to discover where David is. So they find that David is by Nayot Berama. Bichima inyan Nayot etzel Rama. The problem is, if he's in Nayot, then what is he in Rama? If he's in the Rama, where's he in Nayot? It sounds like they're two different locations. How can he be in both locations at once? So he's Doresh El Shayu Yoshvim Berama. They were sitting in the Rama, which is where Shmuel's house was. Boskim bin Noyo Shalulam, and they were dealing with the beauty of the world, and that is the Beit HaMikdash. Amrei, this is what they were discussing at that moment. Div Vikamta Valita Elamakom. Says in Dvarim that you will get up and go up or ascend to the Beit HaMikdash. The implications of that are that the Beit HaMikdash needs to be at the highest point so that you're always Kamta Valita. Melamech Beit HaMikdash Vua Mikol Eretz Yisrael. That the Beit HaMikdash is at the high point of Eretz Yisrael. The truth is, it is not the highest point in Eretz Yisrael, from a number of reasons. Even in the area, as we're going to see in a second, of Yehuda and Binyamin, they made a conscious choice not to put it on the highest point. We'll discuss that in a minute. But even outside of the area of Yehuda and Binyamin, it was not the highest point because there are areas in the Shomron that are clearly higher than that, and areas in the Galil that are higher than that. So what you have to say is that they had some sense that it was in the center of the country. It was in the areas that overlapped between Bnei Rachel and Bnei Leah. I mean, that they had a semblance or an inkling of where it should have been. And now they're trying to discover within that area, where is it? And that will be the question in a second as to whether they were really looking for where it was. I mean, is it in Shevet Binyamin, Shevet Yehuda? That's what they were looking for. Or they knew it was in Shevet Binyamin. They're trying to figure out where in Shevet Binyamin it should be. Those are one of the two possible questions that they're discussing over here, but it's narrower than just saying they were looking for a place. Right? They're not just looking for a place. They have some idea of where it will be located. Eretz Yisrael gvah mikol haaretzot. Eretz Yisrael is higher than all other lands or nations. Now, the Gemara here brings no proof to that, and it's actually not relevant to our Gemara at all. It's brought in here as a sidebar. But Rashi tells you it's based on the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that says when Hashem gathers in the exiles, that he will bring them all up to Eretz Yisrael from wherever they are dispersed. The fact that he has to bring them up shows you that everywhere else is lower than Eretz Yisrael. Now, again, there, that's just not true. Topographically, it's just not true. And what you have to say, and the Mara, the Marsha, all those that interpret these things, say it's a figurative idea. It's a ruchani idea. It is, on a topographical, it has a certain height to it, which is important, but it's not the highest point, but it is the highest place where you can reach out to Hashem, where there is ruchaniyut, where the Shekhinah is centered, and that's what it means, the highest place. So now, lo aveye de duchte. They didn't know where the location was. They're searching for the location. They don't know where it is. Aitu Sefer Yoshua. They brought Sefer Yoshua. They start looking through Sefer Yoshua to figure out where is this location. By all the cases it says, Ve'yarad Ve'ala Hagavul. Ve'tar Hagavul. But it goes to all the other areas when it describes it. It says it goes down, it goes up, it makes a turn, it does all of these things. Shevi ben Yamin, Valaktiv, Vyarad, Loktiv. Says that it goes up, but never goes down. That's not true either. So now, it does say Vyarad. So Rashi here takes a lot of effort to explain this, and I'll do this. I sent this, it's less of the pages of the hand that I sent out, basically comparing the Perek Tedvav in Yoshua, which is describing the area of Yehudah, and Perek Yudchet in Yoshua, which is describing the area of Binyamin. Now as Rashi notes over here, in Sefer Yoshua, the only two Shvatim where we get all four borders of where they were situated is for Yehuda and Binyamin. Now that is partly because the primary conquest of Yoshua is in that area, and then the other Shvatim do some of it afterwards. Yoshua does not do the entire conquest. He doesn't finish everything off, and that's part of the problems that arise later on in Sefer Shoftim, is that you have these pockets of areas that were not conquered or were never taken over. But the Yoshua does describe the area of Yehuda on all four sides, as well as the area of Binyamin. Yehuda is also important because Yehuda extends from east to west, meaning that it goes from the eastern border of the entire Eretz Yisrael to the western border of Eretz Yisrael. It extends from the Yarden, Yam HaMelach, all the way to the Yam HaGadol, to the Mediterranean. That is the area of Yehuda. We know the southern area is up against Edom in that area. The northern area is bordering on the eastern side with Binyamin, and on the western side with Dan and some of the other Shvatim. So there is an overlap of border between Yehuda and Binyamin. The northern border of Yehuda, the northeastern border of Yehuda, is adjacent to the southern border of Binyamin. That's where they overlap. And the Psukim over there describe that border for both of them. In that overlapping border is found Yerushalayim. It's not quoted in our Gemara today at all, but I brought you the Psukim, because in Perek Tedvav it says, Zot Nachalat B'natei B'nei Yehuda, Ve'yu Arim Mikseh L'matei B'nei Yehuda. These are the cities on the borders. And then one of the cities that's mentioned later on there is Ve'te Yibusi Yoshvei Yerushalayim, Lo Yachlu B'nei Yehuda Lo Yisham. They could not conquer them. Ve'yeshev Yibusi Et B'nei Yehuda B'Yerushalayim Ariyom Azeh. Ariyom Azeh is entitled the time of Shmuel, because David finally does conquer that area and takes out Yibusi and removes them. But we know in Sefer Shoftim, during the case of Pelegish B'Gibah, he's traveling past Yerushalayim. He doesn't stop there because he's too scared to stop there because it's a Yebusi city. Also, in the area of Binyamin and Perek Yudchet, if you look in Pasuk Chaf Chet there, it says, "Tzela Elef Vayebusi Yerushalayim Givat Kirat Arim Arba Esrei Katsuyev Zot Nachalat B'nei Binyamin L'Mishpotam." So Yerushalayim, a Yebusi city, is also mentioned as one of the border cities of Binyamin. So Yerushalayim, you see here, sits on the border between Yehuda and Binyamin. It's very possible that's the reason the city wasn't conquered. Meaning that the city that sits on the border between them, it's a diffusion of responsibility, because neither of them thinks that it belongs to them, it belongs to the other party. And if I go conquer it, I'm doing it on behalf of someone else and not for myself, because it's a border city. And that's likely why the Yebusi stayed there, as well as the fact that it was a well-fortified area, and an area which was not heavily settled. And so therefore, Yerushalayim remains in the hands of Yehuda. In the description of the border of Yehuda on the northern side, it starts in Yoshua from the east and goes to the west. When it starts in the east, it means it's starting from Yam HaMelach, from the Yarden. We know that Yam HaMelach and the Dead Sea are significantly below sea level. They're the lowest points on Earth. So you're starting from an area that's very low and then climbing to the west. So if you look at the Psukim there, it says, starting in Pasukei, Ugvul the Pat Safona, the northern side for Yehuda, starts from the Shona Yam Mikzea Yardin, from the end of the Yam HaMelech by the Yardin. Vala HaGvul, the Gvul climbs. Vavar, Vala, Vala, Pone, Vavar, Ayuto Tzav, Vala. All it does is go up, up, up. The border, northern border of Yehuda is climbing from the east all the way up. Now it gets to in Pasuk Chet, Vala Gvul Ke Ben Hinom. It finally reaches the valley of Ben Hinom. El Ketef Ayuvusim Negev Hi Yerushalayim. Bordering on where the Yavusi are, south of Yerushalayim. Vala Gvul El Rosh Hahar. And then it continues to climb to the mountain that is situated above the Gehinom, Yama, going west. Emek Rifaim Tzafona. Vitarak Vol, Mirosh Ahar. And then it turns from there, El Mayan Mei Naftoach. Up to Mayan Mei Naftoach, Viyatsa. Vitar, Vinasav. And then, Vayarad Beit Shemesh. It descends down to Beit Shemesh. So there, you see that the peak of the border of Yehuda on the northern side happened at Mayan Mei Naftoach. Rashi claims that Mayan Mei Naftoach is synonymous with Ein Eitam, which is found slightly south of Beit Lechem near Brechot Shlomo. That's where this area is. That is the high point that they found. If you go look in Binyamin, Binyamin will be describing the southern border of Binyamin. The southern border of Binyamin is going west to east. It says, Upat Negma, Mitzei Kiryat Yarim, Vyatsa, Vyatsa Mayan, Mei Naftoach. It goes up to Mayan Mei Naftoach, so the same Mayan Mei Naftoach, and then Vyarat, El Tzehar, El Pnei Gei Ben Hinom, then it descends into the heart of Ben Hinom, and then Vitar Vyatsa Ein Shamesh, Vyatsel Glilot, Vavar Vavar, but then it's descending from there, Vyarat, Haravota, it's going down from there. So what you see from Binyamin's border and Yehuda's border, the peak of the southern border of Binyamin and the northern border of Yehuda is Mayan Mei Naftoach. And that's what they discovered here. That is similarly what the Gemara is describing over here, that if you follow the border, both from the perspective of Binyamin's property, the highest point is Mayan Mei Naftoach, as well as from the overlap of the border, going from both directions, you see that you climb until Mei Naftoach, and after you leave Mei Naftoach, you descend. So the fact that you descend afterwards shows you that's the high point. And from that, they concluded, Amrei, Shmamina Hachi Umakumo, that's the location. So for the Minei Bein Eitam, that's where they wanted to build it. And Eitam's the highest point, that's where we're going to build it. The Midlake, because it's so high. Amrei, Nitate Bei Kalil, let us drop it a little bit. Let us make it a little lower. Kirichtev Uben Ktefav Shachain, because it's sitting between the shoulders. And just like the head of the shore sits between the shoulders are above the head. So too, you want mountains that are slightly above it, so that it's Harim Saviv La. And Yerushalayim is surrounded by mountains. That's the beauty. When you come to Yerushalayim, you're going to ascend the mountains that are around it. You're going to be, everybody's going to be looking over Yerushalayim. You're going to be looking at the Har HaBayit. That's why if you go in Talpiot to the Tayelet, when you're coming out from the south, you overlook Har HaBayit when you're coming from the southern side. You go to Har HaZitim, you're overlooking Har HaBayit. It's surrounded by mountains that are slightly higher than it, including Ein Eitam, which again is a little bit south of Beit Lechem. So now, the reason to do this, especially in Beit Sheni, is because Yerushalayim does not have a natural water source. The water source that's found in Yerushalayim is in Ir David. Ir David is below Har HaBayit. It's below the area that is the Har HaMoriah. Ir David, which today you can go see the excavations that are there, Ir David goes, descends the side of that mountain, all the way down to the Mei Shiloah, down to the Mayan that's at the bottom. Those are the works that Chizkiyahu HaMelech does. Chizkiyahu's tunnel brings that Mayan into Ir David, but that is the source of water for Ir David. That's the base of Ir David. So Ir David, first of all, climbs from there, and then above Ir David is Har HaBayit. There's no natural water source there. So what you want to do is you want to bring water from a water source. When you are engineering to bring water, you must always start from a location that's higher than the location where you're bringing it to. Water can move up and down mountains. It can do climbs and descents as long as the starting point is higher than the end point. Ein Eitam is 11 amot higher than Har HaBayit. And there is a watered aqueduct that runs from Ein Etam all the way to Yerushalayim and then in towards Har HaBayit, and that is the Amat HaMayim that we found in the Mikdash that comes from Ein Etam. So another reason to do this was to make sure that there was a water source for Yerushalayim, that they could bring in water from a higher Mayan into Yerushalayim. That's why if you lower it below Ein Etam, it helps in terms of the water sourcing for the Har HaBayit. And here's an alternative reason for why we put the Mikdash in Yerushalayim and not in Ein Etam. Gemirei, so now we have a Mesora, the Sanhedrin, Bechelko de Yehuda, Ushkina, Bechelko de Binyamin. We also have a Mesora that the Sanhedrin has to sit in the area of Yehuda. Rashi says that's part of the Pasuk of, Pelo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda, Mechokek Mi Ben Raglav. So that means that not only will they be the leaders, but they will also be, the seat of the Sanhedrin will be within the area of Yehuda. And we also have from Sukkim and Dvarim that the seat of the Sanhedrin needs to be adjacent or near the Shekhinah or the building of the Mikdash. Because it says there that you're going to go up to the Mikdash, to the place where they adjudicate, where the Shofet or the Shoftim sit. So the two are adjacent to each other. And therefore, they said, if we put it at the highest point of Ein Etam, Mit Palek Tuva, too far away from Shevet Binyamin, by which then you can only have either the Sanhedrin there, or if you're going to move it towards Binyamin, you're going to have the Shekhinah B'Shorah there, but you're not going to have the Sanhedrin adjacent to it. So Ein Etam is not going to be a place where you can have that overlap. Now, traditionally, Ein Etam, by most, is assumed to be near Beit Lechem in Yehuda. From this Gemara, it might seem to indicate that it's north of Yerushalayim, because it seems that if they went to Ein Etam, they would succeed at bringing the Shekhinah Shorah. It would be an area of Binyamin, but would be unsuccessful at bringing the Sanhedrin to be there because it wasn't adjacent to the border of Yehuda. Mutav in the Tete Porta, better we drop it a little bit. It sits between the shoulders. If we drop it a little bit off of Ein Etam and bring it a little north to the area of Har HaBayit, then we actually will accomplish all this. We'll end up with Ben Ktefav Shechein, and we'll accomplish the Mesorah to have the Sanhedrin in Chelek Yehuda, and the Shekhinah in the Chelek of Binyamin. So the question was in which Shevet to place it, or within Shevet Binyamin, which location. The focus that this is a high point in the bordering between Yehuda and Binyamin, and we don't have anything such thing that peaks in the border between Yehuda and the other Shvatim. So that was indicative both that it should be in the area of Shevet Binyamin, as well as the fact that it should be in this particular location within Shevet Binyamin. And even though, again, Ein Etam was higher, in order to facilitate the ability of having it on the border between Yehuda and Binyamin, they shifted it over to Yerushalayim, and the additional benefit of it being Ben Ktefav Shechein, as well as the fact that you could now bring water from Ein Etam to Har HaBayit, all those precipitated the conclusion that Har HaBayit, Har HaMoriah, Yerushalayim was the location where the Mikdash was to be built. And over this, Doeg Edomi was very jealous of David. Doeg Edomi, one of the leading parties helping out Shaul in the search for David, and he tattles on the city of Nov Ir HaKohanim that they hosted and gave sanctuary to David. And because of that, Shaul commands Doeg Edomi to go and kill out all of Nov Ir HaKohanim, which he does. But Doeg is jealous here of David's capacity to come to that understanding or to reach the conclusion as to where the Mikdash should be. Kikinat Beitecha Achalatni, because the jealousy of your household consumed me. It's called Unuto. Remember about David and all his suffering and affliction. Shenishbal Hashem Nadar Lavi Yaakov. Ima bobo beti, ima le al eres yitzu'ai, ima tein shnat leinai lafapai tnuma, adem samakom lashem mishkanot lavir Yaakov. Hinei shemanuha befrata, mitzanuha besteyar. Asher nishba lashem, that he took a shvat Hashem, ima bo beol beti. I will not go into my house, meaning that I will not take up residence. Imitate shnat leinai. I will not allow sleep to overcome my eyes. Lafapai tuma, or slumber on my eyelids. I didn't say makom lashem till I find the place where we're going to put the mikdash. And that is borne out in the Tzukim and Shmuel when David goes to build the Beit HaMikdash because of the problem. He says, how can I be living like this? And the the Mizbeach Hashem, the Aron Hashem, is found in a tent. In A, Shemanua Befrata Mitzanua Bistei Yar. Shemanua Befrata Ze Yoshua, the Katim Ephraim. That's not a reference to Ephrata, the place in Yehuda, rather to the Shevet Ephraim, a reference to Yoshua, because the source where David found it was in Sefer Yoshua. Mitzanua Bistei Yar, Ze Binyamin, found it in the field of the forest, which is an animal of the forest. And so that was what it meant here, that when David put his mind to it and afflicted himself to find the right location, he was successful at doing that through his inquiry into Sefer Yoshua and coming to the conclusion that it belongs in the area of Shevet Binyamin. So David HaMelech put his mind to doing this and was successful at finding that location. And Doeg HaDomeh, who according to Chazal was a tremendous Talmid Chacham, was jealous of David, and that precipitated part of the acrimony and tension between them. And Chazal, a number of places in Shas, note that there were machlokot, where Doeg HaDomeh tries to be posel David from being the king, or basically standing up for Shaul and trying to eliminate David as a competitor for the kingship. So all the affliction that David underwent to find that location, he was rewarded with coming to the right conclusion, and that's what made Doeg HaDomeh jealous of him. Alright, and we'll go on to the next Mishnah, which is Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur. Shalmei Tzibur, this is the last of the Mishnayot in Kodshei Kodoshim. There are only one set of Shalmei Tzibur that are brought once a year in the Mikdash. Those are the Kivsei Atzeret. They're the two Shlamim of the Tzibur that are brought on Shavuot, along with the Shtei Alechem. Other than that, there are no Shalmei Tzibur. So that's the Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur. It's a reference to those korbanot that are brought on Shavuot. Ve'ashamot. In that category also are the ashamot. There is a lot of commonality between shlamim and ashamot. That's even with regards to shlamim that are kodshei kolim and ashamot that are kodshei kodoshim. One piece of evidence to that is the way that in Zot HaTorah, that's found in Parshat Tzav, where it lays out all the different korbanot, it puts the miluim between the asham and the shlamim, because the miluim is a combination of an asham and a shlamim, so they sit between. But here, we're dealing with the shalmei tzibur, which are kodshei kodashim, then they look almost identical to the asham. So they are included in the same Mishnah, which is Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur of ashamot. The ashamot of Elohim. Not only are ashamot a general category, let us list for you the individual ashamot. The reason for that is that each asham has its own unique characteristic. Some of them are elim, some of them are kvasim. Some of them are matirim. Some of them are for chataim. Some of them are debrad even if you're mezit. Some bishogeg. So each one of them has a unique characteristic, and therefore now the Mishnah enumerates them individually. Asham zelot, which is found at the end of Parshat Vayikra, with regards to someone who denies owing money under oath. So then if he admits to it, he has to bring an asham zelot in order to rectify that sin. Shami ilot, which we also saw in Vayikra Hey, is for the misappropriation of Hekdesh. You bring an Asham to be Mechaper for that. Sham Shiv Harutzpa, which is found in Pashat Kiddushim, Machloket, exactly what the scenario is. But it is someone who's engaged to a Shivcha Knanit, whether she's a full-fledged Shivcha Knanit, whether she's a partial Shivcha Knanit. But there is an engagement, but there is a some halachic deficit in the engagement, which makes it that they are quasi-married, but not totally married. And there the Torah has an Asham Shivcharuf, if she engages in an extra quote-unquote marital affair, that she has to bring an Asham Shivcharufa. Then you have Asham Nazir. For a Nazir who becomes Tamei, he needs to bring an Asham in order to restart his count of Tara. And Asham Mitzora, which is part of the Tarat Ha Mitzora. Asham Taloi is also found in Mikra Hei, is where you have a Safek about a violation that if you knew you did it for sure, you'd bring a Chatat for. You bring an Asham Taloi if it's done and you're uncertain as to whether you did it. How or exactly what uncertainty that you need, we'll get to later on in Kodoshim. Shkitatan, once again, because these are Kodesh Kodoshim, the Shkitah is Bitzafon. Kibul Daman B'Klisharei Bitzafon, and therefore the Kabbalat Adam has to be done in a Klisharei in the Tzafon. B'Daman Ta'on Shtei Matanot She'en Arba. They're similar to the Ola in the requirement for Shtei Matanot She'en Arba, which is you do the Matan Damim on the northeastern corner and the southwestern corner. You put them there to do shtayim that'll go four directions of the mizbeach. Menachalim lifnim and aklaim, since they are kodshei kodashim, they are eaten by the zichrei kuna inside the walls of the Azara, the Zichrei Kuna to the male Kohanim, the Chol Machal, you can eat it any which way you want. The reason that the Mishnah points this out is because later on, the Mishnah is going to tell us by a Korban Pesach that you can only eat it salit, you can only eat it roasted. So the other Korban Oath, the Mishnah goes out of its way to tell you that you can eat it any which way you please. The Yom Belayla for a day and a night, because it's Kodshei Kodashim, so the day that it's shechted and the subsequent night, because in the Mikdash, night goes after the day. Ad Chatzot, until Chatzot is Kedel Archik at Adam Min Aveira, so you don't run into problems of Notar, which is a few of Karet, where you have you cut off the eating at Chatzot, and not wait until the morning, because of the risks, if you got too close to the border, that you could be toying around with a problem of Karet. And that's, as we noted before, the first Mishnah in Brachot, which the Chachamim say, Kedel Archik at Adam Min Aveira, that's why old Korbanot have a expiry of Chatzot. Okay, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Nundalit Amud Bet.